Our reading this morning, actually, I picked two, but one is from Parker Palmer. And he said, when I was a kid, sanctuary meant only one thing. It was the big room with the stained glass windows and hard wooden benches where my family worshiped every Sunday. Church attendance was not optional for my sisters and me, so that sanctuary was where I learned to pray. Pray that the service would end and God would release me back into the wild. I also learned that not all prayers are answered, no matter how ardent. Today, he says, after 77 years of life in a world that's both astonishingly beautiful and horrifically cruel, sanctuary is as vital as breathing to me. Sometimes I find it in churches, monasteries, and other sites designated as sacred, but more often I find it in places sacred to my soul, in the natural world, in the company of a trustworthy friend, in solitary or shared silence, in the ambiance of a good poem or good music. Sanctuary is wherever I find space to regain my bearings, reclaim my soul, heal my wounds, and return to the world as a wounded healer. It's not merely about finding shelter from the storm. It's about spiritual survival. Today, seeking sanctuary is no more optional for me than church attendance was as a child. Another piece is from Thomas Merton, and it's from his Confessions of a Guilty Bystander. It's about those times where we can find no sanctuary. He says, there is a pervasive form of contemporary violence to which the idealist most easily succumbs, activism and overwork. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of its innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything is to succumb to violence. The frenzy of our activism neutralizes our work for peace. It destroys our inner capacity for peace. It destroys the fruitfulness of our own work because it kills the root of inner wisdom, which makes work fruitful. Thomas Merton. Joseph Campbell says that your sacred space, your sanctuary, is where you can find yourself again and again. There's so much going on in the world, whether it's weather events or politics, it's easy to feel disoriented, to feel a little anxious, agitated, even scared, not sure which way to turn or which way to go. And one thing I should let you know this morning is feeling disoriented. Yesterday and today, this morning, I felt almost a little dizzy. So if you think that I'm not quite right, I'm not. But I think I've got it. But I'm feeling it right now. So that's a part of what you should know. There is this nagging feeling of being a little lost. We sort of wish for a break, a refuge, a sanctuary, a place for knowing where we are and feeling that we just belong there. This is right, a place to be where we are in that moment. Joseph Campbell calls it your sacred space. He says, your sacred space is where you can find yourself again and again. Sanctuary, where to begin. Friday evening, I gave a presentation to the Family Ministry Soul Matters gathering and potluck that we have once a month. I'd just like to set the stage for you. There were 11 adults there and 12 children. 12 children. There were no squeaky pigs, but there might as well have been. It was a happening place. And there was great food. And then we all sat at the same table and enjoyed our food together. And then Sonia did a story, a time for the children, and then they went off to build a sheet tent and watch, what's the movie about the little girl? How did you know that? Moana. Yeah, to watch Little Moana, which was some of their favorite. And then I presented with the group, and we had a discussion of the older people that were left there. There were, what did I say? There were 11 of us, or not counting me. And I did my thing about religion as a word of orientation. I created the big picture of Unitarian Universalism spirituality as a way to know where you are so that you're not lost, so you can go somewhere from there, from here. I created a sense of a spiritual compass. I did my thing, focusing in from, if you had the question of God, but just releasing that, but focusing in from that star-forming region 5106 taken by the Hubble telescope, where stars are born, and I focused into our star, and then where the generous light is coming to us every day, and then I focused in to a picture of blue-green earth and said, what is this? Our planet Earth. And what is that? It's the place where sunlight becomes life, becomes us, and gives us this opportunity to be. And then we focused in on giving that I'm alive. What am I to do with this life? That big question. What is the nature of the universe? What is the nature of being? And I talked about a universalist perspective with, if it's God, a loving God, but an inclusive universe where all are saved, if that's your worry. But there's no hell, and we try to orient in relation to love rather than into being afraid. And then I said, given who we are, how are we to live well? And I used the Unitarian perspective of an exalted view of human possibility with originally Jesus as an exemplar, but now we've discovered there are many exemplars as our view of the world and life has expanded. And then I asked the question, how are we to be together? In this beloved community and embrace, how are we to do that, to make the inclusive vision real in our world and in our lives? And I talked about how we do that through practice and action. But the slides, when they ended, because it's an old PowerPoint, went into the story of the remodel of this space, of this sanctuary, and showed how we went from a fear-based theology with rows and pews, sit and soak, I can go on about that, but how we created a sanctuary that embodies that orientation I just talked about, that embrace, inviting the universe in, welcoming you into this space, hoping that you then go out into the world renewed and inspired, oriented, better ready to engage the gift of life fully and the things that the world throws at you. The second half of the evening, we talked about putting our religious questions, I did that in 15 minutes. We talked about how to put our questions, religious questions, into language that worked for us and gave our children what they needed to move confidently with their friends in this community. When somebody asks your child, do you believe in God? And it's real important that you do. How do you answer that in a way that connects with them but honors what you believe? To end the first part of my presentation, I read this poem to the group. It's called Lost by David Wagoner. And it's supposedly supposed to be a Native American elder giving advice to young men. It could be young women, but the younger members of the tribe. Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to Wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. I wish I'd followed that up and taken the moment then to have us focus on our breathing. Breathe in, breathe out. If I'd done that, we could have had a moment of mindfulness. We could have had a moment of being present. We could have had a moment of finding ourselves. We could have experienced a moment of sanctuary. Stand still. Breathe in. Let sanctuary find you. Breathe. Sanctuary, where to begin? Your sacred space is where you can find yourself again and again. Breathe. Sun, earth, you, alive, light, breath, continuing. I had the pleasure of a similar gathering last Monday night with several newer members, interested people. We had a light dinner, explored this way of thinking about spirituality, and you could call it Unitarian Universalist spirituality, and religion, and we shared our thoughts and questions. We got oriented. Each of us found ourselves in that moment in some way. Last Sunday after service, several of us stayed for the conversation with the minister. I stayed because I'm the minister. And we explored what was on our hearts. Every one of these gatherings was a moment of making a difference. Every one of these gatherings was a moment of being a difference in the world. A sanctuary of real presence. A sanctuary of community. A sanctuary of life and hope, a sanctuary of belonging and resilience, a safe space to regain our bearings and return to the world. Ask any person who was a member or participated in any of those groups if something like that didn't happen, and every one of them will say yes. Something like that happened. I need such sanctuary. I need such moments. And on top of that, I need to recognize them and value them for what they are and not discount them for what they're not in the big drama that is swirling all around us and consuming us all the time. I need to recognize them and value them for what they are, not to escape the world, but so I might better engage the world when I go back out and engage life more fully, more really. Over the last couple of weeks, I have had real periods of feeling lost or definitely disoriented. The events around the Kavanaugh hearings and confirmation really got to me. I couldn't tear myself away from the news as it unfolded. There are many reasons for that. I was caught up in it so much that I had to own up to how fully I have now been drawn, despite all my efforts to do otherwise, I have now been drawn into the make news, not fake news, but in the make news industrial complex. I've been drawn in, and it feels like I'm losing something of myself in the process. Something is being taken from me, and I want it back. I feel like in those moments, I'm actually avoiding life in its fullness in some way. I'm using it as a way to zone out. Think back to Thomas Merton and the violence that he says is being done. I've been watching, checking in a lot on breaking news. It's always breaking news. Well, it's really not breaking for the most part. It's more being repeated and analyzed over and over with minor changes. Still, I'm drawn in and away from what I might be doing. I don't feel better or good after spending my time there, but I do it all the same. I read that it's the dopamine that brings me back. I share this because I don't think it's just my problem. And I'm not even on Facebook. I start to say that we are bombarded by news and media, but I think it's that we are lured into watching, checking, sitting, trying to be part of, feel part of what really is fake community and company. We don't want to miss anything. I read an analysis last week that gave me some perspective on what has happened or is happening to me. Although I never watched reality TV shows, I realized I'm watching now. I'm hooked. It was a piece by Amy Chizik in the New York Times titled, "Why Trump Will Win a Second Term." The byline said, "Reality TV has always been the guidebook for this presidency, and most popular series last for 6 seasons. So that got me to read the article. But that wasn't the point that stayed with me. What stayed with me was what reality TV does and how it gets us hooked. It's must-see TV. Ms. Chizik starts the article talking to Mike Fleiss, and Mike Fleiss is one of the people who originated reality TV. When Mike Fleiss, the creator of The Bachelor and Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire, helped pioneer reality television in the early 2000s, he quickly realized that for any show to work, the audience needed to feel invested. Whenever you're developing one of these shows, you have to find stakes. He says, true love or $1 million. And these days, Mr. Fleiss does what American TV viewers are doing in record numbers. He sits glued to cable news, watching a panel of experts discuss the latest developments in the sprawling, intricate, unpredictable 24/7 show that is Donald Trump's presidency. This is the future of the world and the safety of humankind and the health of the planet that I'm watching, Mr. Fleiss told Ms. Chizik. He paused. I should have thought of that one for my shows. Ms. Chizik goes on to give examples of how Mr. Trump has taken the gimmicks of reality TV that he picked up on The Apprentice and just applied them to governance with what she calls an uncanny grasp of must-see TV. He concludes every episode with a cliffhanger. One afternoon, he said, "We'll see what happens," 11 times. She says, "Whether you're rooting for the anti-hero or cheering for his demise, bipartisan, chances are Trump TV has you under steady, some would say unhealthy, hypnosis." It's not right to call it Trump TV. All the cable news networks are a part of this phenomenon. They want us as viewers, and they use any material and their own cliffhangers to keep us tuned in. How many times do they stop and say, "Coming up after this short break"? That's right. And that's so you participate in the advertisement. You take your life into that space. Since 2014, the primetime ratings have more than doubled for CNN, tripled for MSNBC. Fox News is up 40%. This is a fire that people are being drawn to because it's not something that we understand, said Neil Baer, who is another reality TV show designer. Ms. Chizik points out that we do need to stay informed. Unlike anything else on TV, the storylines coming out of Washington affect lives. They could determine the future of Roe v. Wade, whether immigrant families can reunite, and the health of the global economy, not to mention the health of the earth. Tuning out, I would say tuning out completely, is a luxury only the most privileged viewers can afford. She goes on to point out that still too much is too much. Quote, Hour six, she says, by way of one example of watching a panel of experts debate Bob Woodward's use of deep background sourcing for his book Fear is too much, or spending time thinking about Paul Manafort's $15,000 jacket was another example. But Chizik's article is one enlightening point after another, but it's how she ended it that woke me to the level and effect and cost of what I'm struggling with. It showed me that this is no less than I want more of my life back. I want to quit giving it up and over. I want to limit the effect of this outside pull in order to find myself again. I need sanctuary from this storm. Ms. Chizik writes, when I reached Mr. Fleiss this week, it was a sunny 80 degrees outside his home on the north shore of Kauai. That's Hawaii. His home is by the ocean in Hawaii. He's got it made. It's 80 degrees outside. The surf is up. He's in paradise. And guess what he's doing? It was a sunny 80 degrees on the north shores of Hawaii, but, she says, he was holed up inside watching MSNBC while recording CNN. He couldn't peel himself away. Not with Brett Kavanaugh set to face the Senate Judiciary Committee and the future of the Supreme Court hanging in the balance. Granted, that was one of the high must-see, can't-miss moments. But it shows the juxtaposition of life and what is really present and real and yet then lost to us and lost to our moment. It's what we let be taken from us. The next sentence in Chizik's piece, her closing thought, is what Mr. Fleiss said right after that paragraph, said, I remember when we were doing all those crazy shows back in the day and people said, this is the beginning of the end of Western civilization, Mr. Fleiss told her. I thought it was sort of a joke. But he says, it turns out they were right. I think that's a little overdramatic. I think it's the article's own cliffhanger, if you will. But it does frame again this sense of disorientation, which I can say enters all of our conversations just about when we get together. It frames that sense and the need to find ourselves and our intention, not just our reaction. The need to reclaim and honor and live those things that we hold dear, not just be afraid for them. We need to find sanctuary and create our own sanctuaries so that we might find ourselves again and again. Sanctuary, a place to begin. When you are lost, take a breath. Stand still. The north shore of Hawaii knows where you are. You must let it find you. Your life in Hendersonville knows where you are. You must let it find you. As Parker Palmer said in our reading, sanctuary is wherever I find safe space to regain my bearings, reclaim my soul, heal my wounds, and return to the world as a wounded healer. It's not merely about finding shelter from the storm. It's about spiritual survival. I find safe place to reclaim my soul. So that, as Thomas Merton admonished, the frenzy doesn't neutralize my own inner capacity for peace, doesn't separate me from the fruitfulness of my own work, my own life, separate me from the root of inner wisdom, which makes that work real and fruitful and lets me feel that it is. I go back to our classes and gatherings last week. We paused. We shared food and company. Our disorientation got oriented. we found ourselves in the moment again. We came away a little stronger, a little more hopeful, a little more alive. And in our lives, we found we created sanctuary. As a part of this, thinking about this, I asked a friend in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, how they introduced themselves. And this person said, they say, "Hi, my name is Jim, and I'm a news/sports, what's happening next, aholic." And then this person followed up with what they say too. "I am not cured of this ism. What I really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual practice." On the maintenance of my spiritual practice. My practice of sanctuary, where I can find myself again and again. My practice of sanctuary, where I remember to breathe, where I focus on the breath, and I come back into reality and the present moment. You have this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back saying, "Here." It knows where you are. It knows who you are. You must pause so that it can find you. This morning in our outreach collection, we're going to make life and sanctuary real, and real for those who need it physically and legally and mentally. All those immigrants and their families who are friends and neighbors. The UU congregation in Asheville has actually established sanctuary in one of their buildings where they have a person in need of sanctuary who's been there for over a month now. And they have 17 congregations who are participating in helping staff that sanctuary and helping with the project. We are in the process and in the discussion and in the hopes of becoming the 18th. Religion, a word and way of orientation to life and love. Sanctuary, where to begin?